You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
We bring in Anthony DiComo from MLB.com, covers the Mets. Hey, Anthony, how are you?
Doing well, Lori. How are you?
Good, thanks. Let's start with... Today was also Hall of Fame induction, and Billy Wagner, an important part of a number of Mets teams, including that 2006 team that came up just short, Game 7 of the NLCS, and then, of course, famously in 07 and 08 as well. Anthony, you were just starting out then. What were some impressions of Billy Wagner as a New York Met?
Oh, Billy was old school, and you're right. I was just coming up. My first year covering baseball was 2007. I was an intern for MLB.com at that time, but I do vividly remember Billy Wagner in that clubhouse, totally unafraid to speak his mind, just a throwback to players of previous generations where it was, maybe more open discourse with the media than you really get these days. But as a pitcher, he still very much had it. And really did through the end of his career with the Red Sox and the Braves there at the very end. And that's one of the things that I find most interesting about Billy Wagner, I would say, because he had trouble getting into the Hall of Fame. He made it in the very end of his ballot eligibility. And yet there's easily a case that could be made that he could have pitched another 2-3 years, padded his stats a little, and been kind of a surefire Hall of Famer. So I know it was a sigh of relief for Wagner to finally get in, and this was certainly a special day for him in Cooperstown.
The Mets, now winners of 7 games in a row, and we go from a baseball season, such a game of swings, the June swoon, now they're on a bit of a roll. And the trade deadline here and decisions to be made by David Stearns. The first acquisition, Gregory Soto, the left-handed reliever, so necessary for that bullpen. Pitch tonight, what was your first impression of him and what should Mets fans expect of Gregory Soto?
He was great tonight, 1-2-3 without all that much effort. And we'll see going forward. I think it was interesting tonight because the Mets, Carlos Mendoza deployed Soto, and then late in the game, he saved Brooks Raley for a spot where he needed him and was able to kind of bring Brooks Raley into what felt like almost like a luxury spot, something that had this happened 2 or 3 days ago, Mendoza probably would have stuck with Reed Garrett, and maybe the outcome is the same. But the point is, having two bona fide lefties in this bullpen now gives Mendoza options. He can go to his lefty reliever in the fifth inning if he needs to, not having to worry about, well, hang on, what if the other team's big lefty slugger comes up in an even bigger spot in the seventh or the eighth? So that's the idea behind this. It's exactly what the Mets thought they had going into the year with A.J. Minter and Danny Young. Those guys obviously both got hurt early, were down for the year, but the Mets finally have that lefty duo again in Soto and Raley. And look, Soto is not a perfect reliever. His walk rate is high. He will put guys on base. He is not what you would consider just a lockdown lefty, but he is absolutely better than what the Mets had been dealing with over the previous weeks and months, and that can only help them going forward.
Are you hearing any rumors about the type of lockdown reliever that Mets fans could expect between now and the trade deadline?
Yeah, this to me, Lori, is the most interesting aspect of the trade deadline for the Mets because they have a clear need still. They can stand to improve the bullpen. The entire team looks a lot better if you put one of those high leverage closer types, setup mm-hmm. types that are out there. And there's a whole bunch of them that are out there. You put one of those at the back of the bullpen with Edwin Diaz, with Soto now, with Reed Garrett, with Ryan Stanek, you have the makings all of a sudden of a pretty sharp looking bullpen. That being said, David Stern's MO is he doesn't like to pay for relief pitching. Mm-hmm. He's never really done it to a significant extent. You can point to last deadline when Stearns acquired four relievers, but none of them were really big deals by any stretch of the imagination. He doesn't like paying for relief pitching in free agency. He doesn't like giving up prospects for relief pitching in trades. And yet here we are with relief pitching still the Mets' clear and obvious biggest need. So what does Stearns do? We'll see. And I don't know the answer to that question. I can tell you with a pretty firm level of assurance that the Mets will acquire a reliever. But I'm going to be fascinated to see if it's a top-of-the-line closer type to pair with Edwin Diaz at the end of games, or if it's sort of just another guy like we saw them do last year.
When it comes to other needs, the obvious ones that Mets fans look for, and David Stearns talked about one of them, that if he was going to pursue a starting pitcher, it would need to be somebody who could pitch in the postseason games 1, 2, or 3, not somebody who is just an innings eater. How likely do you think a move like that is out there for the Mets?
I don't think it's super likely, but I also don't want to rule it out. And the reason why I say I don't think it's super likely is twofold. One, to get that kind of guy, the Mets would have to really dip into their farm system in ways that might be very uncomfortable. But that's less the reason than just the fact that there aren't that many guys out there who fit that mold. There might be none, depending on what your opinion of Sandy Alcantara is. Alcantara, obviously a Cy Young winner, but has not been able to put it together since coming back from Tommy John surgery. So is he the type of player
What about like a Mitch Keller or somebody like that? Possible or no?
Sure. I think it's something else that I'm not going to rule out, but I think when you put him against the guys that you have currently in your rotation, who would start a playoff game 1 through 3, whether that's a Sean Manaea, whether that's a Kodai Senga, et cetera, are you going to definitively say that, say, Mitch Keller is better than those guys? I think it's closer than you think. So when you're talking about a deal that's going to force you to give up a big chunk of your farm system, is that enough? Or would you rather spend those prospects on, say, a lockdown reliever that you know is going to be better than what you have already? These are the things that David Stearns has to weigh. But if I'm him, and I think this is what his comments sort of meant to me when he said them the other day, the comments he referenced, Lori, is if we're going to go out and get a starter, it's going to be one of the best guys out there. I'm not personally sure that Mitch Keller's in that group. Sandy Alcantara, I think you could certainly talk yourself into it, that he is the top dog, the alpha out there. He's the one guy more than Keller, more than Zach Gallen, more than Merrill Kelly that I look at it and I say, if you can figure out a way to get this guy in here, your team looks different. The ceiling has been raised regardless of what Sandy's Alcantara's results have been this year.
We're talking to Anthony DiComo about the Mets and the trade deadline, the state of the team. And the other position, obviously, center field, and I understand Jeff McNeil has given them flexibility, and David Stearns has talked about that. But you look at even a game like tonight, and there is a difference watching Jeff, who has been adequate and fine in center, but watching him in center field in a big outfield like San Francisco, you can see to your eyes that he's not really a true center fielder. How likely that they go out and get, you know, whether it's a Luis Robert Jr. or somebody else who's out there, how likely a move do you think on center field, or are they going to stick with what they have?
Yeah, this is a little similar to the starting pitching question in that I think it kind of has to be, say, a Robert Jr. if you're going to go out and do this, because you can go out and you can get Cedric Mullins. He's got a sub-600 OPS since right. The start of May. Is he making you better? You can go out and get Harrison Bader. Well, he's a guy who lost his job, essentially, yep, to Tyrone Taylor last year. So is he really making you better? Robert's the one guy that, despite his results the past 2 years, I think you point to just the physical skills and say, okay, if the Mets can get this guy then all of a sudden it's a different looking team. It's risk reward. You know, to get a guy like that, you're probably going to have to give up either very top prospects or, say, a Brett Beatty, Ronnie Mauricio type, and then Jeff McNeil plays more infield, and you've got all these moving parts. It's a tricky situation in center field, because if there was a lot of inventory out there, I think for sure the Mets, I would say with confidence, they're going to get one, but there's not a lot of inventory out there. Really, in my eyes, there's probably one guy, and that's Robert. So when there's that little supply and more demand, obviously, than just the Mets, I think it makes it difficult to say for sure the Mets are going to upgrade center field, even though that's an obvious place where they can.
One of my listeners, followers, had a question for you. Out of these three guys, who would be the most likely to get moved? He had four and put Beatty in there as well. Ronnie Mauricio, Mark Vientos, Brett Beatty, and Luis Angel Acuna.
It's a really tough question, because it depends on what other teams are looking at as their needs. 3 weeks ago, I would have said Brett Beatty, just because he seemed kind of superfluous to what the Mets were doing. But he has since, reestablished himself as an everyday player and a pretty good one for the Mets. And I really don't think they want to give that up right now. So I guess in my eyes, Acuna would be the one guy that he's a bit of a luxury on your roster right now. He does some really nice things base running and defense wise, but you're not really starting him in the lineup ever. He's coming off the bench. So if another team sees him and says, okay, there's some potential here, obviously, and we want to give him a shot as an everyday player, I think that's a player that probably the Mets could stomach giving up. Vientos, in a similar boat in that he's not playing all that much, relatively speaking, but you would be selling so low on him right now, coming off that dynamic season last year, that I'm not sure if on the Mets, I want to take this opportunity to say, okay, yeah, now is when we trade Mark Vientos, when his value is probably lower than it's been at any point since he was drafted.
As we look at the state of the rotation and upgrading the bullpen, what do you think the Mets' strategy towards how they manage Clay Holmes will be? And what are you seeing from him now? Do you feel like he's hitting a wall, and will that impact how the Mets handle him?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a physical wall with Clay Holmes. Obviously, the results aren't as sharp as they were early this year, but I think there's an element of teams figuring him out a little bit. Maybe there's an element of physical, but I definitely haven't seen it, and I haven't seen a push from the Mets to really pull back from him. They have been adamant, not just with Holmes, but with every starting pitcher, and Holmes is example number one, simply because he's making this transition to the rotation. But they're adamant that innings totals, innings limits, that's not really a thing with them. These guys do testing behind the scenes. They do strength tests. They do baseline tests before the year begins to determine where they should be at. And then there's a constant comparison of that to where they are right now. So as long as Clay Holmes continues to show up well in those tests, he's going to continue to pitch. And that doesn't mean going out there and throwing 110 pitches every time he takes the ball. Like, the Mets are clearly reticent to do that with him and pretty much everyone in their rotation. But barring a starting pitching acquisition over the next few days in this deadline, I would expect Holmes to continue to start pretty much every rotation turn down the stretch. And then, once you get to October, we'll see where the chips fall in terms of who's pitching well enough to be considered for that playoff rotation. At that point, does it make more sense to put Holmes in the bullpen? Maybe. We'll see how guys are performing. But in the interim, again, barring a trade acquisition to push someone out of the rotation, I think Holmes is going to continue to start and continue to go as deep into games as he has been.
Yeah, I think that's the key, as you said, is what we don't know about is there a trade acquisition? If there is a trade acquisition, and then does that give you flexibility with Holmes? And similarly, does it give you flexibility come the postseason? Last one that I want to ask you before I let you go is how have you, your observations about Pete Alonso and his defense over the past, couple of years, and how has that evolved? I mean, we know the range, we know the throwing arm, but if you watch him game in, game out, and watch other teams, just watching his it may not always look balletic or as pretty as some others, but watching him around first base, it seems to me that he is really...
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
...become one of the better glove guys in the league.
Yeah, I think last night's game really underscored it when you look at what was happening on the other side with Rafi Devers and just how every ball to first base was an adventure. And meanwhile, you've got Pete Alonso, who for a while now, if the play's in front of him, he's going to make it. And the advanced metrics that we all look at, they're never going to value Alonso because his range isn't good. If the ball's deep in the hole, he's not going to get it. Mm-hmm. There might be some plays where he misreads and he goes after the baseball instead of covering first base. Like, there are mistakes that he makes, no doubt. But you can do far worse defensively than Pete Alonso at first base, especially for a player that brings so much, obviously, offensively. I do think he's a better defender than the metrics say, than the metrics bear out. And we criticize these metrics all the time because they're very imperfect. They don't paint full pictures of players at any position. And I think this is one example and a good example of a player that's better than the statistics say that he is. Pete Alonso's done a pretty nice job defensively for the Mets at first base, and I expect that to continue going forward.
All right. Anthony DiComo does a great job covering the Mets. I'm sure you're going to be very busy coming up towards the deadline if you're not following him, MLB.com and on social media. Anthony, appreciate the time.
You got it, Lori. Anytime.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.